My fellow Singaporeans, our fight against COVID-19 has reached a major turning point. We will be making a decisive move towards living with COVID-19. The Multi-Ministry Task Force, the MTF, will announce the changes after this broadcast. But let me set the context, take stock of our journey thus far, and explain our plans moving forward. We have battled COVID-19 for more than 2 years now. Right from the start, we had one overriding aim: to protect lives and prevent as many avoidable deaths as possible. We saw in other countries bleak images of people desperately seeking admission into hospitals and healthcare workers being forced to choose who lived and who died. We were determined to prevent that happening here. And fortunately, we have managed to do so. Our healthcare system came under strain, but it was not overwhelmed. We ensured enough ICU beds and oxygen for everyone who needed them. We recorded one of the lowest. Every time we thought we had the pandemic under control, the virus was known about the virus. We adopted stringent measures. Our measures kept community cases very low and helped us to control and clear a major outbreak in our migrant worker dormitories. We bought time to ramp up our healthcare capacity and roll out a comprehensive national vaccination program. Then, the more dangerous Delta variant struck. Thankfully, by then, our vaccination program was in full swing. But we kept strict measures in place to slow the spread of the virus until we had vaccinated nearly everyone eligible, especially the elderly. Meanwhile, we changed our health protocols to allow mild cases to recover safely at home, relieving the load on our healthcare system. When we eased up on safe management measures, we had a large wave of COVID-19 cases. But by then, most Singaporeans had been vaccinated and were well protected from the Delta variant. Still, many patients had to be hospitalized, and some, unfortunately, succumbed to the virus. Not too long after the Delta wave subsided, the virus threw us another curveball. This time, the even more infectious Omicron variant. We braced ourselves as countries across the world saw record high cases. Our numbers went up sharply too, at the peak exceeding 25,000 in a single day. With our high vaccination rate and strong healthcare system, we were quietly confident we could cope. Still, we tightened our border measures and held back easing our SMMs to give our healthcare system and workers time to respond. We were relieved that Omicron turned out less severe than earlier variants and that relatively few cases were serious enough to need oxygen support or ICU care. Over the last 2 weeks, daily new cases have been coming down. Week on week, the ratio is now around 0.8. At this rate, the number of daily infections will halve in about 3 weeks. We only achieved this through everyone's collective effort. You understood the mission and did your part. Trusted the government, accepted sound medical advice, abided by safe management measures, patiently and responsibly. Got yourself and your loved ones vaccinated. Organize yourselves to help one another. Self-tested with ART kits and self-isolated if you tested positive. Businesses and essential workers also did their part to keep our economy and social services going. They adapted repeatedly to changing SMMs. They coped with supply chain and manpower disruptions and stayed resilient despite formidable difficulties, especially in the hard-hit sectors. Thank you for your grit and resourcefulness. You helped us protect Singaporeans' livelihoods and prepare ourselves to emerge stronger from the pandemic. Most of all, I want to thank our healthcare workers. You made tremendous sacrifices at a heavy personal cost, pulling long shifts day after day, week after week, since the start of the pandemic. Returning to work on rest days to cover for colleagues who caught the virus, putting up with all the safety measures at the hospitals, risking exposure as you cared for infected patients. Because of you, we have maintained some semblance of normalcy in the past 2 years. Some countries have seen mass resignations of healthcare workers, but our healthcare team, doctors and nurses, stayed at their posts and kept on performing their duties. So, to our healthcare and frontline workers, from the bottom of my heart and on behalf of a grateful nation, I want to say thank you. Now, we have reached a major milestone in our COVID-19 journey. The overwhelming majority of our population is fully vaccinated, and nearly everyone eligible has received a booster shot. The Omicron wave has crested and is now subsiding. With many of us already exposed to the virus and recovered, our population has stronger immunity. Crucially, our healthcare system remains resilient. It was under considerable stress at the peak of the Omicron wave, but it held up. The load is still heavy, but the pressure is now easing. In judging how far and fast to ease restrictions, we are very mindful not to stress our healthcare workers and system to breaking point. We must not place an impossible burden on the healthcare workers and endanger many COVID and non-COVID patients who urgently need treatment. At the same time, we must weigh the cost of stringent SMMs on businesses and the economy and their impact on children needing to learn, youths yearning to interact, families seeking to bond, and communities striving to connect. Taking all things into consideration, we believe that we are now ready to take a decisive step forward towards living with COVID-19. We will make the following changes to our SMMs. First, we will double the group size from the current 5 persons to 10 persons. Second, we will allow up to 75% of employees who can work from home to return to their workplaces. Third, we will increase the capacity limit for larger events and settings, those with more than 1,000 people, to 75%. Fourth, wearing masks outdoors will now be optional. This is because the risk of outdoor transmission is significantly lower, but indoors, masks will still be mandatory. Finally, we will maintain safe distancing requirements for now, 1 meter between groups where masks are off, to minimize transmission in mask-off settings. These changes will come into effect next Tuesday, the 29th of March. Concurrently, we will ease up cross-border travel substantially. Earlier, we were cautious because of uncertainty over Omicron's impact. Now the Omicron situation is well under control. Nearly all our cases are domestic, originating within the community. Arrivals from abroad constitute only a very small proportion of cases. We can therefore safely open up our borders. we will drastically streamline testing and quarantine requirements for travelers. This simplified vaccination travel framework will let Singaporeans travel abroad more easily, almost like before COVID-19. It will also lift most restrictions for fully vaccinated visitors entering Singapore. This will reconnect Singapore with the world. It will give a much needed boost to businesses, particularly the tourism sector. And it will help Singapore reclaim its position as a business and aviation hub. The MTF will provide the details. These domestic and cross-border changes represent a major step towards living with COVID-19. But they stop short of a complete opening up. We remain watchful because COVID-19 may yet bring further surprises. Some countries have taken a Freedom Day approach. They have declared the pandemic over, relaxed all restrictions at once. Now they are anxiously watching their infection and mortality numbers rising rapidly again. We are choosing to maintain our measured approach, which has served us well over the past 2 years. After this major step, we will wait a while to let the situation stabilize. If all goes well, we will ease up further. But we should also be psychologically prepared for more twists and turns ahead. With more interactions, we too may see another wave of cases. And Omicron will not be the last variant we encounter. The virus will continue to evolve. Hopefully, new variants will become progressively milder and more flu-like. But it's also possible that more aggressive and dangerous mutants will turn up, just like Delta did. If that happens, we may have to backtrack and tighten up our restrictions again. We cannot rule this out, even though we hope it will not be necessary. But whatever happens, we now have the knowledge and the means to keep everyone safe. For example, giving everyone another booster jab or administering an updated vaccine, if necessary. So please take today's announcements in the right spirit. Resume more normal lives. Enjoy larger gatherings of family and friends. Go outdoors without masks or reunite with loved ones abroad. But do not throw all caution to the wind. Each one of us must still play our part. Comply with the revised SMMs. If you feel ill, test yourself. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home. If you test negative and decide to go out, please wear a mask to protect others, even outdoors, just in case. Let us all continue to exercise personal and social responsibility to keep ourselves well, to keep others safe, and to avoid adding to the burden on our healthcare workers. That way, even when new problems arise, we stand a much better chance of keeping things under control and staying on the path to a new normal. We have come a long way in our fight against COVID-19. We are not yet at the finish line, though we are getting closer. Key to our response has been the trust that Singaporeans have placed in your government, in the medical authorities, and in each other. Throughout our journey, we have kept faith and supported one another. This solidarity remains crucial as we tackle fresh challenges ahead. I thank everyone for your continued trust and support. Let us keep it up and see through this pandemic as one united people. Thank you.
Good morning. As the Prime Minister Lee has just said, we have reached a major turning point in our fight against COVID-19. He has also given us an update on the current situation of the pandemic and outlined our decisive move towards living with the virus. We have earlier streamlined our safe management measures based on 5 key parameters: group sizes, mask wearing, workplace requirements, safe distancing, and capacity limits. The streamlining would make SMMs easier for businesses and individuals to understand and to comply with, and also set the stage for reopening when the situation improved further. Over the past week, the number of daily cases has been steadily declining. Our week-on-week infection growth rate is about 0.7 to 0.8, and the number of severe cases has also declined. All these indicate that the Omicron wave has peaked and is declining, and that we can now progress further in our journey towards COVID resilience. So from 29th March, we will further relax our SMMs. First, we will increase the permissible group size for social gatherings from 5 to 10. The number of unique visitors per household will correspondingly increase from 5 to 10 visitors at any one time. Second, we will no longer require the wearing of masks in outdoor settings, but we will continue to encourage it. Mask wearing will continue to be required indoors. Third, we will allow a higher proportion of employees who can work from home to return to work, from 50% to 75%. Workplace SMMs will continue to be aligned with community SMMs. For instance, social gatherings of up to 10 persons will now be allowed at workplaces. Fourth, we will similarly increase the capacity limits for large events with over 1,000 persons from 50% to 75%. We have also been streamlining our border measures as well as country-region classifications with a view to moving towards a vaccinated travel framework. We are now ready to launch this, and Minister Iswaran will elaborate later. We are finalising our discussions with Malaysia on the full resumption of land travel for vaccinated persons and will announce the timeline soon. Thanks to the support of Singaporeans, we have made tremendous progress in our journey towards living with COVID while keeping our health system intact and keeping death rates low. In particular, I would like to express my deepest appreciation to our healthcare and frontline workers for their dedication and grit. We have not reached our destination yet. We may still see an increase in the number of cases following the easing. We may also see new variants emerging here or elsewhere. We will continue to monitor the situation closely, and if all goes well, we'll be in a position to further ease up on our measures. However, given our experiences and the experience of other countries, we must be mentally prepared that we may have to take more detours along the way, especially if our healthcare capacity comes under stress. Let me say a few words in Mandarin. 我要在这里感谢国人在对抗疫情中所给予我们的支持和谅解，我也由衷地感谢我们的医护人员以及站在防疫前线的工作人员，他们无私和英勇的贡献，在我们的企业的配合下， 我们也能够实施了安全的管理措施，保护我们员工的安全。因为大家的齐心协力，我们在与冠病共存的过程中取得了良好的进展。但是我们仍然不能够掉以轻心，对抗冠病的路途是崎岖不平的，也带着有极大的不定性。在防疫措施放宽后，冠病病例或许会增加，我们也可能面对新型的变种 毒株，我们将继续密切关注疫情的发展。如果疫情能够保持稳定，我们可以考虑进一步的放宽措施。但是我们必须做好心理准备，在必要时，尤其是在我们的医护系统受到压力的情况下，我们或许必须要做出适当的调整。即便放宽措施，我希望国人还是会定期的进行自我检测，履行社会责任，保护自己，保护家人。 I would like to remind everyone to continue to exercise personal responsibility by testing yourselves regularly and following the healthcare protocols if you test positive. Let us do our part to help to keep each other safe and to keep Singapore safe, even as we ease up on the SMMs and continue our journey towards living with COVID. Thank you. Now I'll call upon Minister Ong Ye Kung to give his update on the medical side. Are muted.
Can't hear you.
Good morning. Director of Medical Services, Professor Kenneth Mark, and I are dialing in from the Singapore High Commission in Kuala Lumpur. You have heard an update of the local situation. And as you know, a key consideration in our COVID-19 posture is our hospital situation. So let me give an update on that. ICU cases remain very manageable, below 30 cases as of last night. Number of COVID-19 hospitalization has also been manageable. In fact, has fallen from about 1,005 at its peak during this wave to about 1,000 now. The strain, however, is mostly felt at the emergency departments, with many patients seeking hospital care on a daily basis. Unfortunately, these cases are also trending down, but gradually, from 7-day moving average of about 2,800 in early March, which is at its peak, to now about 2,005. So it only come down about 10 to 15%. Fewer healthcare workers are now out of action due to COVID-19. So COVID-19-related absentee rate has declined from 2.7% in early March to about 2% now. So we really welcome back our healthcare workers back to their positions. Nevertheless, hospitals are still very busy. The vast majority of emergency department patients, this is where the strain is felt, and these patients are non-COVID patients. Most of them have chronic illnesses that may not have had close medical follow-up over the past 2 years because everyone is just so preoccupied dealing with COVID-19. These are what we call BAU, or business as usual patients. And we now have a BAU debt that has to be repaid one way or another. The BAU debt has therefore become a separate non-COVID-related healthcare problem. It also means that whether infection numbers, daily infection numbers, go up or down, the impact on BAU workload at the emergency departments may not be very significant. We will need a longer-term structural response to address the problem of the BAU debt. And we are doing four things. One, progressively shift our focus back to serving BAU patients in our hospitals. And hospitals are now freeing up some of the beds and manpower that has been ring-fenced for COVID-19. Two, expand the capacity for the long term. After much delay, we are now targeting the opening of three more nursing homes in Pasir Ris, in Potong Pasir, and Henderson. And that will happen in April 2022. Next month. This will help relieve a significant number of patients from hospitals, and these are patients currently in hospitals waiting for their nursing home places. Three, we will continue to make full use of the CTFs, the COVID treatment facilities. The existing CTF at Tampines will be converted back to a nursing home around April. Sengkang Community Hospital, which has been serving as a CTF, will be reconfigured to swing more to BAU patients, especially serving Sengkang General Hospital. Number four, we'll continue our existing collaboration with the private hospitals. Our partners such as Raffles Hospital, Mount Alvernia, Parkway Hospitals, they have been a tremendous help. They can help admit and manage clinically stable non-COVID patients from the emergency departments. Now, let me briefly talk about the three areas of change we are announcing today: vaccinations, border measures, and domestic safe management measures, or SMMs. First, vaccination. MOH has agreed to the expert committee's recommendation of a fourth vaccine dose for those who are immunocompromised, have serious chronic disease, live in aged care facilities, or aged 80 and above. The fourth dose will be administered 5 months after their last vaccine dose. This is because these groups of individuals have been found and observed to experience faster waning of protection against infection and, to a lesser extent, severe disease. I should highlight that even if you do not take this fourth dose, you retain your full vaccination status. So it is strongly recommended so as to better protect yourself if you fall into any of the above risk groups. Based on current epidemic situation and the characteristic of the dominant variant in Singapore, there are no plans to extend the fourth dose to the rest of the population yet. But it is an evolving situation which we will watch closely with the expert committee. Second, border measures. We have earlier talked about transiting to a new vaccinated traveller framework that the PM has just announced. And we have taken some preparatory steps, and we announced that earlier. And we are now ready to make that transition. And that means that normal travel will resume almost to like pre-COVID times for fully vaccinated persons. I just want to reiterate the public health rationale for this transition, and it is as follows. The principal consideration on travel has shifted. In the past, we were worried about the top line infection numbers, and we don't want imported infections, so we prevent that by imposing tests and imposing SHN stay-at-home notices on travelers. Now, with high vaccination coverage and having gone through two major waves, our main consideration is the bottom line, which is whether travelers who are infected will burden our healthcare capacity. It is therefore more important to ensure that travelers are fully vaccinated with effective vaccines than to put them through SHN or tests while they are in Singapore. Hence, we will do away with on-arrival tests completely. This is because once you are in Singapore, if you are unwell, you should see a doctor. If you are detected with COVID-19, follow protocol 1, 2, 3. As for pre-departure tests, in time, we should be able to remove it too. And this is especially given that imported cases account for a very small percentage of total daily cases, and the vast majority of travelers recover very uneventfully. However, given the rising infection numbers in several countries and our relaxation of many other measures that we are announcing today, we will take a calibrated approach when it comes to pre-departure tests. So we will remove pre-departure tests only for land travel and retain it for air and sea travel. We will review the situation again in 2 to 4 weeks. There has been feedback that it may be difficult to book a supervised ART test overseas before departing and returning to Singapore. We have therefore set up a remote supervised self-swab ART service for Singaporeans, PRs, and work pass holders. So do book your appointments early with the providers. You can just log on and they will observe you remotely. And details will be in today's press release. With the transition, MOH will remove the categorization of countries by risk levels. We will instead only have 2 categories, a general travel category, where travelers can come here quarantine-free so long as they are fully vaccinated. And then a restricted category for regions where variants of concerns have been detected and where we may temporarily suspend or slow down travel while we find out more about the variants of concern. But currently, there are no regions or countries in the restricted category. Minister Iswaran will further elaborate. And finally, safe management measures. Minister Lawrence Wong will explain this. I just want to highlight that after our streamlining of measures to SMM 1 to 5, we did not observe a pronounced rise in cases. In fact, cases continue its downtrend. And this is a very significant outcome. It means that moving forward, we will be able to focus on the five most important SMM levers, 5 months now, to manage the pandemic. And with 5 rules, people can better understand the rules and do their part to help manage COVID-19. Finally, let me just talk briefly about living with COVID as an endemic disease. The MTS set out this strategy last year, and today we are taking a significant step forward. But today's announcement marks a pivoting, not a dismantling, of our COVID-related measures. We cannot abruptly dismantle all our measures because that means letting down our guard, and that will result in the virus coming back to impact us and hurt us. The COVID-19 virus continued to spread around the world with new surges in several countries. There's still the risk of new variants of concerns that may take us back to square one. It is very important for us to remember that the Omicron variant is not a mild disease. It is certainly less severe than Delta, but not mild, and can kill its infected patients, especially if they are vulnerable and not fully vaccinated. As we speak, we are seeing rising death tolls in several countries around the world. So when we say we want to live with COVID-19 as an endemic disease, remember that endemic diseases like influenza and yellow fever continue to kill a lot of people around the world every year. To live with them, we need control measures such as vaccinations, tests, maybe some isolation, various health precautions, so that we can manage the risk and live alongside. Many can be stepped down. Many of these measures can be stepped down as we become more resilient and the situation improves. But others, such as remote working, masking in high-risk areas, recovery from home, performing self-tests, periodic vaccinations, may become part and parcel of a new normal. Our approach of going all out, vaccinate people, and take a middle path, neither zero COVID or Freedom Day, has produced good results that distinguish Singapore. Our cumulative incidence of COVID-19 deaths is about 200 per million population. This is a notch lower than other countries such as Australia, South Korea, Japan, UAE, Qatar, but far lower than many other countries in various regions around the world. They recorded several hundreds or even thousands of deaths per million population. Under our approach, we will restore normalcy progressively, and today we are taking a significant step, and with each step, we will monitor the effect of our actions and move further based on the data. So let's keep staying true to science, take a balanced approach, watch out for each other, and we will continue to make good progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. The Ministry of Health has asked our public hospitals to review the number of beds that need to be dedicated and set aside for COVID-19 patients and to progressively convert them for use by non-COVID infected patients. As Minister Ong has shared, this is important given that non-COVID patients now form the majority of cases that require specialist care within our hospitals. Today, the adjusted bed complement in our public hospitals that continues to be ring-fenced for COVID-19 cases comprises just over 1,500 isolation beds for both adult and pediatric cases and 90 ICU beds. About 120 beds in the private hospitals is similarly dedicated for COVID-19 cases. These numbers will change as we dynamically adjust our bed complement based on the COVID-19 demand, and all healthcare institutions retain their ability to surge and increase bed capacity when needed. The public hospitals will be progressively resuming elective procedures and admissions as the capacity returns for non-COVID clinical activity, and this will be prioritized based on clinical urgency. We continue to refine the scope of care for COVID-19 patients based on our local experience. We found that low-risk children between 12 months and 5 years who have been infected with COVID-19 have generally been doing very well, and similar to children above the age of 5, who have been able to recover at home under our primary care directed protocol 2 framework. So, from the 25th of March, tomorrow, we will allow these low-risk children infected with COVID-19 infection aged from 12 months and older to be managed within our P2PC or primary care directed protocol 2 framework, extending beyond the current age threshold of 5 years and older. This means they no longer need to be hospitalized by default and may recover at home, supported by family physicians. Our expert committee on COVID-19 vaccinations, or EC19V, has been looking at our local data concerning the waning of vaccine protection in our population against COVID-19, particularly for both the Omicron and Delta variants, as well as the accumulating international evidence on waning vaccination protection against severe disease over time. EC19B has made a recommendation for a second booster dose to be given for persons who are medically susceptible to severe infection. And this helps these higher risk groups to remain adequately protected against a severe COVID-19 infection as we resume normal activities. MOH has accepted these recommendations for the following groups to receive a second booster dose at around 5 months after receiving their first booster dose. And these are persons who are aged above the age of 80, those who live in aged care facilities such as nursing homes, as well as medically vulnerable persons who are at increased risk for severe COVID-19 infection and a poor outcome due to their significant concurrent medical risk factors. These risk factors include chronic diseases of the heart, lung, kidneys, liver, and other organ systems, which will lead to poor function or even a failure of function of these organs. I should point out that immunocompromised persons have already been recommended previously to undergo a third dose as part of their primary series and to undergo their booster dose, which is a fourth dose, because their weakened immune system has led some of them not to mount a sufficient immune protection after their normal two-dose primary regime. There are no recommendations for this group to receive yet another booster dose, which would otherwise be a second booster dose or a fifth dose. EC19B has also considered whether a second booster dose is needed for healthy persons in younger age groups. These persons have better immune responses to vaccination and are at a lower risk for getting severe disease. Our local data shows that their protection against severe infection has been sustained after their third mRNA vaccination dose, and the degree of vaccine waning over time has not been as great as in the older populations. Their existing immune protection remains sufficient, and this is supported by international data, which has yet to provide as clear evidence of benefit for the fourth dose compared to in the older age groups. EC19V, therefore, has not made any recommendation for them to receive additional vaccination doses after their first booster dose. But we will continue to look at our local and international situations and make further recommendations on this at a future relevant time. Although we are not counting the second booster dose for prevailing vaccination differentiated measures in the community, I urge those who are eligible for that second booster dose to take this fourth vaccination dose. And despite the Omicron wave being on the decline now and Omicron being less severe compared to previous variants, we do continue to see persons being infected and having an increased risk of hospitalizing, being in the ICU, and ultimately dying. We do continue to see a disproportionate greater number of people who are unvaccinated or have not derived the full protection from vaccination being in the ICU and dying. So please do take that fourth dose if you are eligible. We've further looked at our death rates from COVID-19 recently, and we have seen a slow increase in the age standardized rates due to the Delta variant that we previously had to deal with. This is not unexpected, and the levels are similar to that now as seen in 2017, before the COVID-19 pandemic. And we will provide more information on this in a separate press statement shortly. Thank you.
Good morning and thank you for joining us. To echo our Prime Minister, we are at a major milestone in our journey towards living with COVID-19. And we are now taking a decisive step to reopen our borders and reconnect with the world. I have previously spoken on our plans to reopen our borders in two phases. In the first phase, since September 2021, we have launched vaccinated travel lanes with specific countries and regions. To date, we have 32 VTLs by air and VTLs by sea with Batam and Bintan. Passenger traffic at Changi has continued to grow steadily, reaching 18.2% of pre-COVID levels last week, the highest since we closed our borders in March 2020. Nearly 600,000 travellers have entered Singapore or returned home using our air and sea VTLs. In the second phase of our reopening, we will shift from vaccinated travel lanes to the vaccinated travel framework. The Ministry of Health has streamlined the country region classification into two categories, general travel or restricted. This framework will be the new baseline setting. From the 1st of April 2022, all fully vaccinated travellers from any country or region will be allowed to enter Singapore quarantine-free, provided that they have not been in countries or regions on the restricted list in the preceding 7 days. We have no countries on the restricted list at present. Along with this shift, we will streamline our processes to make travel more convenient. First, we will remove the need for short-term visitors to apply for entry approval. In other words, fully vaccinated visitors will not need to apply for a vaccinated travel pass before entering Singapore. Second, we will no longer have designated VTL flights or ferries. Fully vaccinated travellers can take any flight or ferry to Singapore to be accorded quarantine-free treatment upon arrival. Third, we will ease testing requirements. Fully vaccinated travellers will not be required to take an on-arrival test. However, for now, those arriving by air and sea will still need to submit a negative pre-departure test result taken within 2 days of departure for Singapore. As explained by the Minister for Health, this is a precautionary measure as COVID-19 cases are rising in some parts of the world. We will review this requirement in 2 to 4 weeks by mid-April, taking into account the prevailing public health assessment. And fourth, we will simplify the SG arrival card, which all travellers are required to complete. CAAS and MPA will release more details. MOT has also been working with our aviation and maritime partners on operational adjustments at our airport and ferry terminals to prepare for this shift to the vaccinated travel framework. With the discontinuation of designated VTL flights and quotas, airlines can simply submit their plans to CAAS and operate flights as they used to pre-COVID. Aircrew can also resume normal activities in Singapore or overseas and will be subject to similar testing requirements as vaccinated travellers. Airport workers will only need to put on surgical masks, except for those in higher risk roles who will be required to wear a face shield and gloves. They will also no longer be subject to rostered routine testing. We have stopped the segregation of the airport into zones. Henceforth, all travellers arriving from countries and regions in the general travel category can move about freely in the transit areas. Changi Airport Group is also progressively reopening the retail and F&B outlets in the transit areas. With these moves, our aim is to welcome airlines back to Singapore, to serve Singapore and the region, raise passenger volumes to at least 50% of pre-COVID levels this year, and restore the traveler experience that Changi is renowned for. As we press on with our reopening and move to the vaccinated travel framework, I wish to highlight two important aspects of this transition. First, our airport community is gearing up for higher traveler volumes by ramping up recruitment and recalling their experienced workers. This will take some time, given the scale and the challenges. Second, we must be prepared to quickly re-establish the public health protocols if the COVID-19 situation changes suddenly, as it has in the past. We must, as it were, preserve the muscle memory in our system by ensuring that we preserve our capacity to process passengers from restricted list countries at dedicated areas in the airport, and to quickly stand up on-arrival testing and other public health measures at the airport and ferry terminals. In this transition to the vaccinated travel framework, MOT is working closely with other ministries, government agencies, and our aviation community partners to ensure a safe and seamless travel experience for all travelers to Singapore, while safeguarding public health amidst the evolving COVID-19 situation. We seek the support and cooperation of Singaporeans, frontline workers, and visitors for these efforts and measures, which will help secure tens of thousands of livelihoods and the competitiveness of our economy, which depend on our air hub. This shift to the vaccinated travel framework is a decisive step for Singapore and an important signal to the world that Singapore has fully reopened its borders, that we are reconnecting with the world and reclaiming Changi's status as an international aviation hub. Thank you.
The last 2 years have been challenging for our students and staff. Our blended learning model, comprising in-person schooling and home-based learning as a last resort, has helped us to largely mitigate the impact on the academic learning of our students. I'd like to thank our parents for working closely with our teachers to bring this about. However, beyond academic learning, we are also concerned with three other aspects of our students' development: their social-emotional well-being, their language learning, and their opportunities to interact with their peers, including those from overseas. Therefore, going forward, the risks of COVID must be balanced against the risks to the long-term development of our children. With the update of our national COVID posture, MOE will similarly adjust our posture and SMMs to better support the learning needs of our students. First, we have resumed all 29 sports of the national school games this year. We will also resume the Singapore Youth Festival later this year. And these are important milestones in the holistic development of our students. Second, we will take a phased approach to the resumption of normal learning by offering selected teachers and students the flexibility to remove their masks for language and literacy lessons. Educators have given feedback that the wearing of masks have posed challenges in teaching students with higher developmental needs, as it limits opportunities for teachers to make use of important visual and auditory cues. The early years are critical for language acquisition. It is important that the learning needs of our students for speech and languages to not be compromised, as there may be ramifications for the longer term. Third, we will also enable and encourage our schools and students to re-establish and expand connections with their overseas peers. Overseas exposure is important in helping our students develop a deep understanding of the world that they have to operate in. This is also fundamental to Singapore's role as a global hub. Given the fluid situation, we will continue to refine our SMM postures as necessary to balance the learning needs of our students and mitigate the risk to our students and staff. The majority of our students have been vaccinated, and our safe management measures such as wipe down routines and safe distancing when students are unmasked will continue to be in place. Let me say a few words in Mandarin. In the past 2 years, the pandemic has given our students the learning a lot 可以说我们以最大的力度减轻了这些负面影响。不过在接下来，我们也得关注我们的学生在其他方面的长远发展，这包括他们的身心发展、语文学习，还有他们和他人，包括和外国朋友的互动与交流。 我们必须在确保学生安全的同时，也考虑他们的长期需要，最大程度地减低疫情所造成的负面影响。平衡这些考量之间的取舍，以及以大部分的学生已经接种了疫苗的为前提，我们将做出 三个调整。首先，今年我们已经全面恢复了全国校际运动会。接下来，我们也会恢复举办新加坡青年节。第二，在听取许多语言老师和家长们的反馈之后，同时考虑到幼儿园孩童和小学生正处于 语言关键期，我们也将逐步允许一些教师和有需要的学生在上语文课时免戴口罩。第三，我们也鼓励更多的学生和学府恢复海外交流，开拓视野，这对我们的学生和国家的长远发展 至关重要。我们将继续地密切关注疫情的发展，在有需要和疫情允许之下，适当地调整我们的安全管理措施，在顾及师生安全的同时，尽最大的努力，让我们的学生在重要的成长时期得到全面的教育 和发挥他们的各自所长，所以我再次感谢我们的老师还有家长和我们学校的合作，让我们的学生在这两年里面可以继续的学习成长。谢谢。Good
morning. Let me reiterate my appreciation and thanks to everyone in Singapore, especially our healthcare and frontline workers, for your cooperation and sacrifices in this long fight against COVID-19. We've gone through several ups and downs over the last 2 years, but we have continued to keep faith with one another and we have persevered together along this journey. And that's why we are now ready to make this significant move to ease up further. You've already heard about the easing of the SMMs along the five key parameters, or SMM 1 to 5. Let me just touch on these 5 points in Mandarin briefly. 我们之前宣布的简化版安全管理措施主要分成五大部分：社交人数、戴口罩、安全距离、工作场所限制以及场地容量。现在我们将根据这五个部分放松一些防疫措施。正如总理刚刚公布的，从3月29号开始， 社交聚会人数将从目前的5人增加到10个人，这表示我们可以10个人一起用餐，每户家庭每次也可以接待5个访客。可以回到办公室上班的员工比例会提高到75%，大型活动的场地容量也将提高到75%。戴口罩方面呢？ 我们还是需要在室内场所戴口罩，不过在户外，你可以选择不戴口罩。最后，如果没有戴口罩，我们还是要保持1米的安全距离。放松这些措施是我们在抗疫路上的一大步。我非常感谢这2年来大家的合作和努力，尤其感谢我们前线医护人员的付出。 但是我们还没完全走出疫情，所以希望大家继续保持警惕，负起社会责任，让我们继续往以冠病共存这个目标前进。Besides the five key parameters of the SMMs 1 to 5, which we are easing, we are also making 5 additional adjustments that are setting specifics. These will also apply from next Tuesday, and let me touch on them briefly. First, dining in at F&B establishments. With group size moving to 10 pax, you can have 10 fully vaccinated persons dining together in F&B establishments, so long as there are upfront checks done at the entrance to ensure that these are fully vaccinated persons. But we recognize that some F&B operators face difficulties putting in place these access control points and doing these checks on their customers, especially for operators of coffee shops and hawker centers. So we will make some adjustments to the implementation on the ground. And in particular, we will allow all F&B establishments to seat groups of up to 5 fully vaccinated persons without the need for full checks at the entrance. So if you do not want to have the access control points and do full checks at the entrance, then you can have the flexibility of having 5 vaccinated persons dine in together. And instead of these upfront checks at the entrance, we will have random spot checks to ensure that only vaccinated persons are dining in at these places, and the onus will be placed on the dining in individuals to abide by the rules, namely that they should be fully vaccinated. We hope this will ease the operational burden for our F&B operators. Second, alcohol consumption. The current restriction in F&B establishments on the sale and consumption of alcohol after 10:30 p.m. will be lifted. Third, live performances will be allowed to resume at all venues, including F&B establishments. We will also allow the screening of live broadcast programs at these establishments, and outdoor live performances and busking will be allowed to resume too. Fourth, larger scale social events and gatherings. Up to now, we've only allowed marriage solemnizations and wedding receptions because these are key life events. And we've held back from other large scale social gatherings and events like gala dinners, corporate D&D events, birthday celebrations, or anniversaries. We will now allow such social events and gatherings to resume. these events should still comply with SMM 1 to 5. And that means you should not have more than 10 persons per table. Safe distancing of 1 meter should still apply. And we would continue to encourage all participants to exercise prudence and self-restraint and limit your interactions to the same group that you are seated with. Fifth, vocalization activities. We had also previously taken a strong position against such group vocalization activities like mass singing because of the higher risk of transmission. But given that we are now in a different position, we will start easing this restriction. So long as masks are worn throughout such activities, we will allow for congregational singing, cheering by audiences or participants at events, as well as singing in general settings, including our schools. So all of these five changes which I've just outlined will take effect from next Tuesday onwards. And the relevant agencies will provide more details on any further detailed requirements specific to their sectors. There is one more area which we are looking into, and that's the safe resumption of nightlife businesses. And that includes bars, pubs, karaoke establishments, as well as nightclubs. These are activities with higher risk of transmission, and it is also generally more difficult to comply with the prevailing SMM 1 to 5 in these settings. So the agencies are still looking into the resumption of activities in these areas, and they will provide an update on the reopening of the nightlife sector in the coming weeks. Let me conclude. We are making a major move to ease up further, both at our borders and also within our community. But we are deliberately not going for a complete opening, as you have heard just now from the Prime Minister and several ministers on this panel, because the pandemic is not over and there will be more surprises ahead of us. So I hope everyone understands the rationale for our opening up and take the changes in the right spirit. By all means, let us cherish these hard-earned relaxations, make full use of them to resume more normal lives and to reconnect with one another. But please do not let our guard down and abandon all caution. Continue to uphold personal and social responsibility and be mentally prepared that the situation can worsen. There is always the risk down the road that our healthcare system may come under tremendous pressure again, that we may see new variants that are more aggressive and dangerous. And if such a situation were to arise, we may have no choice but to tighten our restrictions again, and we hope everyone understands this. Whatever happens along the way, I want to assure all of you that the MTF will remain committed to our mission to protect lives and livelihoods, to see through this pandemic, and to emerge stronger as one united people. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now invite questions from the media.
Thank you, Ministers and DMS. We will begin the question and answer session now. Members of the media, if you'd like to ask a question, please use the raise hand function. Could we have the first question from SD? Timothy, please.
Thank you, Ministers and DMS. Given that we have taken decisive steps towards living with endemic COVID-19, is there still a need for safe entry and trace together? And is contact tracing still being done? Thank you.
Maybe I answer that from KL.
Yep, go ahead.
Yes. Contact tracing is in our TT app. So long as it's on, it will automatically detect based on Bluetooth technology. So I think maybe, Timothy, your question relates more to safe entry, which is actually an imposition on businesses. So Minister Lawrence Wong has explained that we will enforce, that the key thing is today safe entry is mostly used to check vaccination status. It is still the easiest way to check for vaccination status. Yeah. But as Mr. Lawrence Wong has mentioned, we are evolving a different way of enforcement such that for establishment that do not want to set up the entrance control, they can step it down and based on random checks amongst the patrons to check that they are vaccinated. That way, we think, will help many establishments to step down and reduce the burden of enforcement and administration.
Thank you, Minister. We will now take the second question from Tao Pao. Chipping, your question, please.
Good afternoon, Ministers and DMS. This is Chipping from Tao Pao. Since vocalization activities such as congregational singing and singing in schools are now allowed, may we know when will MTF allow the resumption of mask-on singing in karaoke outlets? And what will be the resumption criteria? Thank you.
Singing is permitted, as I mentioned just now. If you are going to do karaoke singing, for example, in the community center or whatever karaoke room, that can resume already next Tuesday. Group singing in a congregational setting, in a school setting where they are masked on, they want to sing their school song, they want to sing some other songs, that can also be permitted from next Tuesday onwards. The one thing that I highlighted that we have not yet decided to do from next Tuesday, but we are studying, are the nightlife sector. That segment comprises KTV, karaoke establishments with a public entertainment license. And in these settings, we know that there is not only the higher risk of transmission, but generally more difficulty complying even with SMM 1 to 5. And that's why, as I mentioned just now, we are studying that. We would like to see the reopening of this sector. It's, as I mentioned, they comprise of bars, pubs, nightclubs, as well as karaoke establishments, all with a public entertainment license. And for this segment, we are studying, and we will announce later the plans for reopening of these establishments.
Thank you, Minister. We will now take the next question from CNA. Sherlyn.
Hi, Ministers and DMS. My question is about the role of COVID-19 therapeutics going forward. It's said that the oral pill Paxlovid well, it has been rolled out at polyclinics and GPs. Have they been used on any patients yet, and have they been able to mitigate hospital admissions?
Maybe DMS?
Yes, thank you very much for your question. We have started the prescribing of oral antiviral therapies, mainly with Paxlovid at this point in time, with polyclinics, as well as with some of PHPC clinics. We started out with 3 of the polyclinics and I think 20 of the PHPC clinics, but we will progressively scale and extend this once we review the experiences with the initial group of clinics. At this time, the doctors report they've started to prescribe some of these medications, but because this is still in its early stage, the numbers of patients being prescribed still remain small. It has not significantly made an impact yet on our overall numbers of patients being admitted into hospital for severe infection, hospitalization, or death yet. But we will continue to watch this and see whether or not we can discern any future change in trends as a result of the use of antiviral therapies. We are already using other treatments in the community treatment facilities as well as in our hospitals, but these are less practical in the outpatient setting because they involve the intravenous administration of medications. But we will continue also to review to see whether we need to tweak on our protocols involving those medications as well.
Thank you, DMS. We will now take the next question from Channel 8 News. Poling.
Hi, Ministers and DMS. We are taking 2 major moves, the relaxation of domestic SMS as well as easing out of cross-border travel. why the decision to do both concurrently? Because previously, we usually take one step at a time. Would it be too risky to do so, especially just after the Omicron wave? We'll appreciate if you can get a reply in Chinese as well. Thank you.
Why the question is, why do we take domestic measure and border measures at the same time? First, when it comes to border measures, you will see that the imported cases now is less than 1% of total daily cases. And travelers, generally, they are younger and healthy, and they don't pose a burden to our healthcare capacity. That's why in opening border measures is actually quite, we can manage the risk. As for domestic measures, that is mainly driven by our existing transmission wave and also the situation in our hospital. And that too, given that the cases have dropped, the burden on hospital has also eased, although hospitals are still very busy because of the BAU patients I explained earlier. But judging the entire conditions that we are going through now, the timing is right for us to effect a change from next Wednesday onwards. So the two considerations, there are two separate set of considerations and both are aligned that allow us to make this move concurrently. If I just respond to that in Chinese, 我们这一次呢是在边界的管理还有内部的管理都做出了一个重要的一大步。 解放我们现有的措施，这考量有一些连接，但是也有不一样的考量。边界的管理呢，现在我们订立的进口其实是每天病例的百分比少之于少，少过1%，而且我们的旅客呢，大多数比较年轻，也是比较健康。 也对我们的这个医疗系统没加上什么负担，所以在边界管理方面，我们可以比较放心的放松，让我们边界管理放松，让旅游能够复苏。至于我们内部的管理呢，刚才也解释过了，我们现在的一波已经在开始缓慢，每天的病例减少。 对这个我们的医疗管理制度的压力也比较减少，虽然医院还是非常的繁忙，尤其是紧急部门是更加的繁忙，但是很多其实是非冠病的病人，我们这个会有其他的方法来想办法处理这个问题。所以大致上看现在的数字，现在的情况，我们在内部管理也可以开始松懈我们的措施。
Thank you, Minister. The next question is from Reuters. Chidlin.
Ministers and DMS, what is Singapore seeing in terms of the reinfection rates and to what extent it may affect our reopening plans? Thank you.
DMS, you want to comment on the reinfection rate?
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't have the specific information concerning reinfection rates with me at this time, but we'll try and get some information to you. It's a little bit difficult to look at reinfections at this stage simply because we don't have all the data with us concerning those who previously had infections, whether overseas or domestic, and then to consolidate that with their current infection, but we will have a look at the data that we have and see whether we can make any comments on that. Our assessment concerning reinfections is that that reinfection rate is low, given the vaccinated coverage that we have, and even though the Omicron variant is associated with an increase in reinfection rates, these reinfections have been generally less severe. And have not posed to be a significant concern at this stage. Notwithstanding this, it is the seniors, those with who are medically vulnerable, who stand the highest risk of getting a bad outcome if they do get reinfected. And this comes back to the reasons why the EC19V have recommended The fourth dose or the second booster dose, which we strongly encourage all who are eligible to take.
Just to add that, I think the question also sort of raises the broader point which we have been highlighting just now, that as we resume more activities and as we open up, which we are planning, to, which we have announced, we must expect that there will be more interactions and potentially more infections. Could be reinfections, could be new infections. But as we have highlighted before, our focus is on the healthcare system and making sure that if so long as cases are not so severe and there is no pressure on the healthcare system, we can continue on this path of opening up. So the key remains vaccinations and boosters. And as we have repeatedly said, making sure that all of us do not just let our guards down and continue to uphold personal and social responsibility, even as we take these steps to open up decisively.
I should just add that in addition to the reinfection risk, we have to take into account several factors, including new variants that could emerge from time to time. And therefore, we must always be prepared to make adjustments to our safe management measures and to expect detours from time to time from our journey towards COVID resilience.
Thank you, Ministers and DMS. The next question is from the Business Times, Annabeth.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Okay, great. Thank you for your time today. So my question is related to the entry of individuals. I understand that fully vaccinated travellers will be allowed into Singapore outside of the BTL framework. We were hoping to better understand the definition of fully vaccinated as it will be updated, given that the EC19B has changed the recommendations, especially for seniors and, as Prof. Mark mentioned, the immunocompromised. So will the definitions for fully vaccinated travellers be updated, including, you know, that 270-day threshold? And would it apply to SCVs as equally as to Singapore residents and to long-term pass holders? Thank you.
Maybe MOH, yeah, Yigang or DMS?
Yes, thank you very much for the question. The vaccinated traveler follows our definition of fully vaccinated in Singapore. So that involves completing your primary regime of a WHO EOL listed vaccine. And these are already known in the open domain and public domain. You not only have to complete that primary regime, but if you are now eligible for your first booster dose, you should have completed that first booster dose as well. So it's broadly aligned with the eligibility criteria to enter into public spaces, bearing in mind our prevailing vaccination differentiated measures that are in place. We do understand that there are travellers who come from overseas who may not have had an opportunity to complete their booster dose, even if they have completed their primary vaccinated regime. And therefore, when they enter into Singapore, they may do so with a short period of exemption, but within 30 days. If they choose to stay much longer than that, they will need to avail themselves of a booster vaccination that we are prepared to provide within any of the vaccination centres in Singapore. And further details will be made available through the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Transport.
I just want to add that for these travellers that we avail a booster shot, they will then have to pay for the booster shots.
If I may augment that, as you have heard, the definition of what constitutes fully vaccinated will be set by the Ministry of Health. What I want to add is I mentioned earlier that we are simplifying the SG arrival card, working together with the ICA and the Ministry of Health. And one of the features in that for SCPR and those who, in our residents who have been vaccinated here, is that when they input their ID details, there will be a back-end check with the system so that their vaccination status will become apparent straight away. So that takes some of the uncertainty out of this for our residents who are traveling.
Thank you, Ministers and DMS. We will now take the last two questions. The next question is from Yahoo News, Han Kyung.
Yeah, hi. I would like to ask, what is going to happen to the safe distance ambassadors? Will they be redeployed to other areas such as healthcare facilities now that the restrictions are going to be eased?
The restrictions are eased, but obviously there are still requirements to comply with. Particularly, as we have highlighted, SMM 1 to 5, they still apply. And therefore, there will be still a requirement for SDAs as well as enforcement officers. But obviously, in this new regime, we want to also encourage everyone to take on more social and personal responsibility and rely less on external forces or enforcement checks. And if more people can do this and uphold that sort of personal attitude of personal responsibility, then indeed, over a period of time, we will scale back our SDAs and allow these people to be redeployed in other sectors for which there are huge demands for manpower too.
If I may just add a comment, which is to thank our SDAs for 2 years of very hard work, going all around Singapore, watching out for our fellow Singaporeans. Of course, with all these changes, the demand for SDAs probably will come down. But on the other hand, in MOH, many of our operational staff doing whether it's vaccinations, contact tracing, call centers, many of them are actually from the aviation sector, and we expect them to return to their posts very soon as our borders open. So some redeployment opportunities will be available, and we'll continue to explore other opportunities that we can place the SDAs. But having said that, as mentioned by Minister Lawrence Wong, we are going through a tight labour market, and there are actually job vacancies in various sectors as well.
Thank you, Ministers. We will now take the last question from today. Eugene?
Hi, thanks for the presentation. So I just want to check, what do these relaxation in rules mean for our vaccination differentiation schemes? Or rather, you know, what would it mean for the unvaccinated?
I'll take that question. Today, we're making some very significant moves to relax our various measures while cognizant that hospitals are busy. But we assess that the workload now mostly come from BAU patients, and we need a separate structural response to solve this slightly longer-term, medium-term issue. And I outlined them just now. So this is also a time where we don't want to add additional burden to the hospitals. And we do know that even with Omicron variant, although it's less severe than Delta, unvaccinated or not fully vaccinated persons are still a lot more likely to fall very ill if they are infected. As of now, we have about 2.3% of adult population not fully vaccinated, and they account for about a quarter of severe illnesses, ICUs, and deaths in our hospitals. So I think the hospitals now still need to be protected, given the current stage. So that's why today we are not announcing any steps to ease the vaccination differentiated measures. Although at some point, when hospital situation is better, when the great, great majority of Singaporeans and our population is well protected, they will be able to protect the small minority of not fully vaccinated persons. That time, I think, will come, and we'll continue to monitor the situation and when we can moderate or set down BDS.
Thank you, Minister. Members of the media, we have now come to the end of the press conference. Thank you, and have a good day ahead.
And you've been listening to Singapore's multi-ministry task force on COVID-19, speaking about the significant easing of coronavirus curbs in the city-state. The government has announced major border changes to make travelling easier, with most restrictions lifted for fully vaccinated individuals. Now, Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong revealed the revision of the country's COVID-19 safe management measures in a national address. Wearing of masks outdoors will be made optional, and group sizes will double from 5 to 10. Capacity for both workplaces and large events will be raised to 75%. Now, these measures take effect next Tuesday.
We are choosing to maintain our measured approach, which has served us well over the past 2 years. After this major step, we will wait a while to let the situation stabilize. If all goes well, we will ease up further. But we should also be psychologically prepared for more twists and turns ahead. With more interactions, we too may see another wave of cases. And Omicron will not be the last variant we encounter. The virus will continue to evolve. Hopefully, new variants will become progressively milder and more flu-like. But it's also possible that more aggressive and dangerous mutants will turn up, just like Delta did. If that happens, we may have to backtrack and tighten up our restrictions again. We cannot rule this out, even though we hope it will not be necessary. But whatever happens, we now have the knowledge and the means to keep everyone safe. For example, giving everyone another booster jab or administering an updated vaccine.
Singapore's daily infections are set to halve in about 3 weeks. Daily cases are declining with an infection growth rate consistently below one. Prime Minister Lee is urging people in Singapore to take the changes in COVID-19 measures in the right spirit. He adds that resuming more normal life doesn't mean throwing all caution to the wind, and so personal and social responsibility are key.
We have come a long way in our fight against COVID-19. We are not yet at the finish line, though we are getting closer. Key to our response has been the trust that Singaporeans have placed in your government, in the medical authorities, and in each other. Throughout our journey, we have kept faith and supported one another. This solidarity remains crucial as we tackle fresh challenges ahead.
From the 1st of April, all fully vaccinated travellers will be allowed to enter Singapore without needing to serve quarantine or take a rapid test upon arrival. Entry approvals will not be required. Now, this will also apply to all non-vaccinated children aged 12 and below. Now, it comes as Singapore launches its vaccinated traveller framework, which will replace existing vaccinated travel lane arrangements for air and sea travel. Now, for now, air and sea travellers must still take a pre-departure test within 2 days before leaving for Singapore. The government has also set up an additional option for remotely supervised rapid tests for travellers coming from countries where testing is not easily available. Singapore will recategorise all arriving regions into two categories, and at the moment, all territories are in the new general travel category, but a restricted category exists in the event more stringent border measures are required against any region as the pandemic evolves.
This shift to the vaccinated travel framework is a decisive step for Singapore and an important signal to the world that Singapore has fully reopened its borders, that we are reconnecting with the world and reclaiming Changi's status as an international aviation hub.
And Olivia Marzuki brings us some market reactions to these latest announcements on